Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. It is officially reading break. I hope you guys are using this time to just relax and recharge from the better half of last, you know, the half of the semester, which I can't believe we're already in, including reading break. I'd say this is our seventh or eighth. I can't quite remember, but yeah, it's reading break, guys. We are officially halfway into the semester, which means for me, I have another half to go. And most of you guys as well, too. So today's episode, I'm bringing back with another interview I have for you guys. I'm sure that you guys are going to enjoy this episode as well. I really enjoy doing interviews, and I hope you guys enjoy listening to them as well. Thank you to all the CITR staff members, executives, and everybody who was able to contribute and get involved with the Fun Drive event. The finale was on Saturday. I really hope that it went well and everybody had such a great time. It has truly been really great. You know, I think we did a phenomenal job in raising a lot of money and you know, curating all these events for you guys. So I just want to give a special thanks to all the CITR executives and staff members who made this happen. You know, there's a lot of work and dedication that goes under creating these events and really planning out everything. So thank you to all of you guys for making it happen. And I really hope that everybody had a chance to really get involved with CITR, you know, get to know what we do here. And had some fun as well. You know, that these events are made for everybody to have a great time and meet some people and just, you know, dance and listen to great music. So that's a wrap for Fun Drive. We're kind of finished for the main events that goes on in CITR and Discorder. The first one usually being Victory Square Block Party that happens in September. And then going on to Shindig Battle of Bands, which is around November and December. And finally, Fun Drive, which is our annual fundraising event that goes around mid-May to end of May, I'd say. So it's a week event. But yeah, that's where, you know, we're done those. I hope everyone is doing well with the semester so far. The midterms, I don't know if it's still going on or if you guys are finished. For those of you who are finished, congratulations. I guess you guys have some leeway and some breathing room to just really relax and take a break. But for those of you who have some, like me, after the reading break, we are still on the grind. But, you know, it's also important to balance that out with having some fun and meeting some friends and family members. I know someone who went to Mexico, who, you know, maybe went some other place as well just to relax since it is a week break. So, yeah, I hope you guys are taking the time to really give yourselves some rest and really recharge before the semester begins again next week. The weather lately has been okay, I guess. It's a bit sprinkly outside right now, but there's some sun here and there. Some rain as well lately, but we've been getting a lot of sun lately, you know, the past couple weeks, a lot of sun, a lot of warmth, but, you know, it is kind of raining down a bit recently. But you know what? I think that's great too. You know, some rain sometimes is also a great thing for us to, you know, just enjoy. And I'd say some rainy days really give us a chance to appreciate those sunny ones as well. So yeah, I hope everything is going well for you guys. You know, it's really exciting that we're almost halfway through the semester and really time flew by very quickly. And we have another half to go before summer hits. And I hope you guys are also taking the time to really plan out the summer as well. It's a very exciting time of the year where we get to travel and maybe stay home and catch up on the things that we weren't able to quite do during the semester or during our work environment. So I hope that goes well for you guys. Before we get started, why don't we get through some ads, PSAs, and some show promos, and then we'll go right into the episode for today. So I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansem, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthas Yakuya, Tali.
sin, for my queen must stay
out. We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music sessions.
Run for them life when I step into the jungle.
We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email, ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Devin Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat-worthy bops. This is the era of fempop, and Devin Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devin Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be smitten, but I'm a fiend for the troublesome boy who's driving me wild. Keeping me on the tip of my
tongue. Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyber web? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives: news, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
Loneliness.
You've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry, no job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue. Right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
How he feels about it. Blues ain't nothing but a man, good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
All right, we are back. I hope you guys are having a wonderful afternoon so far. Like I said, for those of you who have just joined in, my name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Leanin' with Jeff. For today's episode, I have a interview lined up for you guys, and hopefully you guys are going to enjoy this as well as much as I love doing interviews. I just think that interviews are just such a great way to really learn about someone and dive deep into their career paths and, you know, their values and what they learned. I just always enjoy doing interviews, and I think I enjoy listening to him as well, and through that, to participate in it myself, it's just always been such a great thing for me. But before we get into the interview, why don't we take some time to listen to some songs? This is actually from a band that you guys are aware of because I put it up a couple episodes ago. They are the band called The Prairie Joggers. I hope you guys enjoy this band. I really, really enjoy listening to them as well. And their songs are just great. I think I love it. We're going to be specifically listening to the album that they put up. I don't know if it's recently, but it is one of them, called The Weight of It. But you know what? I think we're just going to go with the album Do You Need Me? I really like the cover photo that they have. So why don't we kind of begin with this, and then we'll move on to the interview segment for today. So here we go.
Yeah, ready.
Where did all the love go? Today is dead.
That was called Runner by the Prairie Joggers. The next song I have for you guys is called Do You Need Me, which is the name of the album. So we'll get through this and I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
Guns with a stick, she'll grow up quick. Lead a lonesome life, take a stab at it.
I still wonder.
All right, that was Do You Need Me by the Prairie Joggers. And the last song I have for you guys is called Second Season. So we'll come back after this. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope you guys enjoyed those songs, but let's get right into the main portion of the radio show today. I am here with a very special guest, and I'm just going to give it off to him and just ask him to introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Justin, and I'm essentially the founder of Ego Cognito.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on to my show. He's on a very busy schedule, so I really appreciate you coming on and really giving me the time to interview you. Why don't we just get started? So before we go into your product, I want to learn a bit more about who you are, and what your interests were, what you were like. So why don't we go way back, however back you want to go, and just ask you, what were you like as a student or as a kid? Were you always curious in creating stuff and in this business industry? What was that like for you?
Yeah, wow. big question. I guess if we were jump through the hoops here, I was originally from North Vancouver. I grew up in the Capilano area, West Van area, Hollyburn area, and ever since I was a kid, I was really creative. I ended up teaching myself how to code when I was 8 years old. Ended up selling web pages when I was 9. And around the same time when I was learning how to build web pages too, I was working a paper route for North Shore News. That was like me at 7, 8 years old, right? That kind of gave me this little, ideas like, when I was a kid, I could make money like this, right? And it was really just like for like $7.25 an hour. It was terrible. But back then, when you're a kid, prices were lower, and at the same time, it's like you need money, so you do whatever you can, right? And I wasn't really so consumed with the idea of money. Money was great just because, I could afford a Game Boy game or something. This is like when Game Boy was a thing, right? But mainly it was just to be able to hang out with my friends, buy candy, and, have fun. A lot of water fights, yeah, things like that, So I used to be more, fun-loving, and that never left me, right? Kind of going forward in time, I ended up, after high school, I grew up in Canada most of my life, parts of USA, been to parts of Asia, but I never lived in Asia. And then my father had this weird idea to, send me overseas to China. And that's where I kind of had my first taste of like really being independent. So it was quite the journey. From that point, I got into professional sports, a little bit of racing, cars, which is so random. Didn't ever expect to end up there. But yeah, I took it, I ended up discovering I was good at something, and I kind of found purpose in that. So,
yeah, it's a very unique story, going from, coding when you were 7, 8, and then being a professional race car driver, and now you're a business owner of a product. I want to learn more about the coding at 7 years and 8 years old.
Sure.
Because when I remember when I was a kid, and you are a bit older than me, I remember like the iPod, and I didn't even know what the word coding was, nor was I even exposed to that word. How did that interest come up? Were you always involved with technology? Was coding even a thing back then? I'm not even quite sure at 7 or 8, but how was that? How did you end up being exposed to that area?
Yeah, so... back when I was in junior high, because I was actually in Alberta during that time, we had junior high there. I had this one teacher. His name was Mr. O, and he used to run this computer class, and I took it as an elective, and I joined in there. And then, we're learning about Flash Micromedia and all these really fun stuff. And there's this thing, this one section on coding web pages, right, which I really, he gave us all the resources and stuff. But this is like later. This is after I actually taught myself coding. That's how I got better at it. But beforehand, like when I was a kid, I used to really be into looking at like Legend of Zelda fanfics and like Pokemon fanfics. And I would see these websites and I'm like, whoa, I'm like, these look really cool. Like, how do people even make these things? And then I kind of learned a trick from my cousin at the time. He told me to right click the page and just view source. So that's what I did. I just view sourced. And then when I checked out, the code in there, I'm like, whoa, what is all this, right? And then I realized, whoa, okay, so this is like the title. This is this. And I was just kind of like, reverse engineering the whole thing. And then I copy-pasted the whole thing. And I just kind of worked backwards, built my own little code segments in different notepads. And I just started like copy-pasting. And then, yeah, I just started looking up guides online.
Wow. I mean, it was like 2-3 years ago. I keep forgetting that I'm in my final semester. But when I was in my first year, I took a computer science course for a bit until I ended up just dropping out of that one. But it's a lot of work, and especially because you have to look at all these videos and, learn all these new terminologies. Did you enjoy that process? Was that always just curious for you? Did you just love being in that environment of just complete newness and unfamiliarity and like complexity and just, really just digging deep into how everything works?
So I was really huge on like Warhammer. It's like that model game, and playing with plasticine, right? So I was very creative in that time. I was painting, I was doing all sorts of stuff. I was just bored. As a kid, I was bored. I didn't know what to do. And then, when I was chilling, I learned how to, put emulators in my computer and stuff like that. And I think the one thing that got me with when it came to like web pages, like there were no videos at the time. Like it was so hard to find a video online. This was in the era of dial-up, right? So it was just like, yeah, the most I could find was like written guides, like typed up guides essentially, right? But the one thing that got me going, right, wasn't like these guides or, resources and stuff. It was really just going through all these really cool web pages that I just like had bookmarked. Because I'm like, ooh, this is cool, right? And I just view source on every little thing to see what was different between the two. And then I kind of pieced it together there. And there were certain functions that I couldn't figure out. I'm like, so wait, how do you do this, right? And then I would just kind of peek in there and I'd figure it out. So,
is coding something that you still continue to learn and continue to do?
Absolutely. It was more like on a need-to basis kind of thing, because, you know, I have a bunch of different hobbies, but the one thing, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, life is something where, you know, it's definitely more fun to live when you're trying so many different things. And it's like, wow, yeah, I've tried that. But, you know, coding for me, it's like it kind of evolved from doing like front end development stuff, you know, like HTML, CSS, JavaScript, that kind of jazz. And then moving on to things like React Native, learning about GitHub, learning how, you know, things like Firebase or all these other different things go. It's like, and every single, depends what you want to make, that determines kind of like what stack you want to work with, and kind of putting together that stack and asking friends questions or figuring things out online. Nowadays, there's so many resources now. It's insane. Even, you know, pair coding, you don't need a partner with you anymore. You just have the AI, right? Which just empowers you. It's like, you don't even know what that is. The AI will tell you exactly what that is. So,
yeah, I guess this is a great segue to ask you, of the comparison between when you began coding and learning about it and then now using the resources that are available, you know, today in this era. Can you speak more about how that was? What was that comparison like? Possibly any pros or even cons that you've experienced throughout your journey in coding and learning about this?
Yeah, so I feel like coding back then was definitely more archaic, meaning it was very, it wasn't as advanced. There was a lot less shortcuts, and the best shortcut that I had was pretty much paste, like copy-paste. Nowadays, it's like you make a mistake or there's something wrong there, it'll tell you that it gives you suggestions. It can help you pretty much do all your development note-taking, right? So you save a lot more time in today's world. It's like pretty much imagine just being buffed, right? Like in today's world, anyone can pretty much take a computer, ask an AI how to do something and learn. You don't even need a teacher anymore. It's pretty great.
I think this goes back to the question of, you know, technology overrunning a lot of these things in the purpose of efficiency. Do you think at all that because you didn't have those shortcuts in the past, was in any way beneficial for your future endeavors with your company or with your business or with creating, you know, certain things or being involved with technology? Or do you think this efficiency will ultimately serve in a very, very beneficial manner and will have no, I guess, cons for future or even current programmers today that are using these resources?
You know, totally. Like, I think the one thing for sure, it's just the fact that back then we just didn't have as many assists. And therefore, there was a lot more of time that was required for a developer or someone who was just interested in coding to go through their code and really see where, how, like, you know, you'd notice how messy you were. You'd find all your bad habits and how can you clean things up to make it so that way I can find a problem a lot easier, right? In today's world, you don't need as much attention to detail, I feel, because there are certain things where I'm like, and then suddenly I'm going to try to process, oh, it's not working, wait, what? Oh, right. But then back then, it's like, wait, I can't, like, you're pretty much spending an hour or like less to kind of go through everything and be like, I can't find this problem, right? Unless someone else had a better technique back then. But that, yeah, for me, it was just like, I had to like stare at that thing and find problems in between. Realistically, it was just kind of like doing a jigsaw puzzle. You know, if you're the kind of person, you're into puzzles, you're into like solving mysteries, you're into that kind of stuff, I feel like, and you can stare at a screen long enough, I feel like, yeah, code kind of gives you that fix.
Totally. I want to go into the idea of collaboration. And obviously, collaboration is a very huge thing with creating a business or even working in general, whatever you're doing, whether it's projects. Technology does have this thing where it tends to eliminate collaboration sometimes because of how efficient it can be and because of how much resources that you are available and have access to. However, it seems like collaboration is always existing in one way or another. How has that been with you compared to coding and learning all that when you were young and then now with all those resources? Has collaboration been consistent? Has it differed in any sense? How was that experience for you?
Yeah, so kind of going back to what you said earlier, right, with collaboration, possibly, you know, maybe putting people more in a black box kind of situation because they're just so empowered by, you know, the tools that they have, so they don't need to rely too much on other people. I think it's, in my brain, right, I feel like it's the opposite, actually. I feel like because we have all these tools and access to so much more, is that people can accomplish so much more on their own, therefore people become a lot more sufficient, self-sufficient, and are able to collaborate better with people who are even more knowledgeable sometimes, because they don't need to know everything immediately off the bat. They just need to be able to read things properly and interpret things properly in order for them to have the right conversation to go forward. I think collaboration is, of course, the only, you know, teamwork makes the dream work, right? I can't say it any better than that. And realistically, being able to collaborate with your team is critical on all fronts. No one person can do the job, right? They can't do everything. And you need to learn to rely on people, but you also need to learn that people aren't perfect. Systems are not perfect. And the only way we get around imperfections with processes or people is really to create fail-safes. And I feel like with the technology that we have now, fail-safes with AI and everything, is we're so much able to create those things and create better collaboration, better cohesion. It's just more about the realm of, yeah, like you said, like that black box situation. I think what it does is it can really affect people's desire to communicate. And I think communication is probably the most important aspect about collaboration.
Absolutely. You had a very, very, I'd say, creative life with so many avenues and so many things that you've taken throughout the course of your life so far. Personally, sometimes I feel like I have a little bit of anxiety of, you know, not knowing exactly what I want to do or taking risks and going and exploring different things. But it seems like you've been very open to a lot of these opportunities and these paths. Throughout this process, I guess, since you were young until now, what sort of mindset did you have in approaching these new things? Was it ever scary for you, or because it's so unfamiliar, did you ever have this hesitation in the back of your mind? How was that for you?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you can definitely relate to this idea. Like, for me growing up and me trying things and doing all these things, a part of me, although I'm naturally creative, I was deeply a perfectionist. And that had it had wonderful ways of pushing me, but it had terrible drawbacks in terms of keeping me going. And I feel like having, you know, kind of lived life and, you know, learned from situations that just pop up. You never know how life kind of takes you by surprise, right? But you got to be creative. You got to stay light on your feet. You got to be able to bounce the ball, and you got to learn how to play ball, right? It's like, for example, if someone throws you a ball and it's like, oh, great, the situation is in my hands now, and you can do one of two things. You can dribble the ball, you could pass the ball, or you can just drop it and be like, I don't want to play ball, right? Realistically, you learn to pass the ball, right? And you learn how to shoot the ball. You learn how to take actions in stride. You learn how to calculate. You learn all these things, and you only learn that by trying things and experiencing things. And I really feel like the number one thing for people to do, especially if they want to do anything in life that goes beyond just, you know, what's in front of their face, is to kind of give themselves a moment here and really reflect on, hey, you know, if I could go off and do this, what would my life look like versus if I were to do this? Like, for example, before I even got into racing cars, you know, why did I even choose doing racing cars, for example, right? Realistically, it was just because the opportunity was really in front of me, right? Like, not everyone gets that opportunity. But other things, for example, like I could have gone to real estate, I could have gone onto this, I could have gone to that, right? And I didn't choose those. Why? Because for me, my life was not about how much money I could make. It was really about, you know, what's cool. And I was like, man, that would be really cool if I tried racing. That'd be really cool if I tried making that card game. It'd be really cool if I just, you know, tried shooting that piece of content and releasing it. It'd be really cool if I could put a team together. It'd be really cool if I try to be a DJ. And I think that's the kind of creative life that you got to live. You just got to look at things and be like, yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to give that a shot. And if you don't think it's cool, why do it? You know, it's just like, there's no point. It doesn't feel good, right? So.
Did you have a role model or someone you looked up to who had that sort of mindset, or was it something that you've built throughout your life?
Oh, man. I feel like that's something I definitely built throughout my life. However, I will not be so bold to say I didn't have inspiration sources. I think there was one phrase that really stuck in my head. Once upon a time, you know, one of my uncles, you know, he used to actually work here at UBC. But the one thing he always told me, I'd go into his billiards room. He had a really nice place in Richmond. I'd go there and he'd be shooting pool. And then we'd talk. And there's one phrase that always stuck in my head. It's like, young man, it's just like, you know, make sure, you know, be a character above all else, just be a character. Right. And I didn't really understand what that meant. Right. I was like, you mean like a cartoon character? You mean like Spider-Man? Like, what do you mean by that? Right. And it wasn't until over time, you go through life and there's going to be a lot of, you know, gray decisions, black and white decisions, a lot of decisions that you're going to have to make. Right. And it just came to me where it's like, hey, you know what? Even though I'm offered something that maybe it's not exactly morally acceptable, for me, it's my decision to decide whether or not, you know, is that appropriate? And for me, a lot of times I'd be like, yeah, no, that's not me. Right. A lot of times I'd be like, hey, you know, actually, I feel like I should explore this route a little bit more. But I was always the kind of person, you know, I'm a little fearful. I don't like to jump head in, like head first. I like to jump in feet first. So for me, it's just like I like to kind of warm myself up into things like that. But for inspiration sources, it's a tough one because I'm one of those people I don't like to idolize. It depends what tradecraft. Like, for example, in racing, at one point, I really looked up to people like Ayrton Senna. But then over time, I would start reflecting on, hey, you know, but I think that someone like Senna was too emotional. And although I totally vibed with that emotionality, because I could be that way sometimes too, very intense. But there's also this area where it's like, you got to take the best aspects from all these different people, right? And try to see, you know, how does that, if you agree with those aspects, combine them into you. You're your own individual person. You're your own artist. Go ahead and grab those cool things that you found and shove them all into one and see whether or not you can make them fit. And maybe sometimes they don't fit together. But I think citing a person is very difficult for me. In terms of other inspirations, probably within my family. I mean, there were some really cool people, family, friends even, that I learned a lot from. But yeah, as an example.
I think you put it in a very beautiful way. And I do think that citing a specific person is a very difficult thing, but it also sometimes doesn't work very well because, you know, no one's perfect. And I, too, myself also look up to people, but more specifically look up to the trait that they have. And through that trait, I get to embody it in my life and use it in a way that will serve me, you know, reach my goal. Is there a specific trait that you particularly value or really try to stick towards throughout your projects or, you know, the way that you live your life?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. And as you were saying, I was like, wow, yeah, actually, which one is it? I really feel, I don't know if this is exactly, you know, hitting the mark, but I feel like it's attention to detail. And not just attention to detail to just, you know, details, but people, like, how are people feeling? You know, how are people reacting? You know, even the most micro expressions in a board, in a meeting with a team, right? For example, if I notice that so-and-so is like feeling uncomfortable because of something or something like that, like it just puts like little question marks in my head. And it's kind of like an RPG game, kind of like, I hate to be a little bit of a nerd here, but it's like, I see that and it's like, okay, I might have to dig a little bit into that to see what that means. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but it's better to just ask the question and check in with people because maybe you might uncover information that might help you to steer things a lot better. I just think that checking in with people and having attention to detail shows people that you care. And it also shows that you have the ability to most likely not drop the ball when it matters the most. So, the more you care about the details, I really feel like that's the number one thing I really kept with me. I didn't want to be a perfectionist anymore because that was just choking me to death, right? But I really feel like still having attention to detail and not taking it so personally on yourself when you mess up, but more like seeing like how could you have seen that better? And really that is just, you know, really paying attention to people. Like people are like everything when it comes to building a team. And they will sometimes, you know, people will surprise you. Like you think, well, oh, you know, like some people are very pessimistic. They're like, oh, you know, I don't really think this person can do it. I'm like, well, did we give them a chance? You know, did we throw them into the deep end or talk to them and be like, hey, would you be interested in trying this thing, right? And really get a feel for them. Yeah.
I really like your answer. I think a lot of the times, even for me, when people ask me about specific traits, you know, I wouldn't say it's generic or, you know, it's, you know, cliche, but, you know, like loyalty or like honesty. But attention to detail is a very great answer. And when you said that, I immediately thought of trying to be perfect because the word detail, it's always correlated for me at least with really getting everything right and that little small details. But the way you phrased it, I do think that it's so important to really look at I guess the so-called like small things, you know, the things that you might neglect. And I think through that, it really does make or break something that you're trying to create.
100%.
I want to get into your journey to race car driving. But While I'm thinking about this question, I'm always curious about the idea of failure and really messing up. For me, I don't think I've had so far a moment where something messed up in a very devastating manner where it's just like really crushed me in a way as a person. And I do know that inevitably, and I think everybody will go through this, and I'm not trying to be, not optimistic about, life and all that. But I think in one point or another, you will experience something that will just really discourage you from what you're doing. And in the back of my head, it's always something that I fear because I'm not sure how to get back from that when that does happen, because just imagining it, I can't even deal with it sometimes. Was there a specific incident where you would consider something as like a failure in your life and how you overcame it? And what was it that really brought you back up?
Yeah, wow. So first of all, tons of failures, probably way too many. And to the point, I'm not embarrassed about it anymore. I mean, maybe some things I'm a little bit embarrassed about, but kind of looking at, failure and kind of overcoming things, right? I feel like first and foremost, the number one thing is to accept that, failure is going to happen whether you like it or not. The question is to what level of failure, right? And have I experienced heartbreak on my failures? Absolutely. Have I caved in and hit the deep end in questioning my own existence? Absolutely. But the bottom line is you got to know yourself. You got to really believe in yourself no matter what, that you have the power to really not just alter the course of your own destiny. You have the ability to alter the course of destiny around you. And if you take that into your hands, you have to, it's just like you have this responsibility, but there's a sense of strength that comes from it, right? No matter how far down the black pit that you sink, at the end of the day, you're always able to kind of like source within, find some sort of inspiration to get yourself back up there. And I think it comes down to one thing more so than everything else is that you just want to do better. And no matter what failure you go through, no matter what hard times you kind of go through, no matter what life throws at you, I think the number one thing is learning to trust yourself is probably is a lifelong challenge. And being able to have faith in your ability to overcome these obstacles is going to come down to your own ability to make decisions. And I think if one can look at themselves and say, hey, I really screwed that up. But, and I'm using, PG rated language, right? I really screwed that up. Holy cow, but, and sometimes there are no words to express how you feel. Sometimes you just have to sit in that void for a little bit, right? But at the end of the day, you have to realize that, all of that is in your hands. You can make a difference in any way in the lives of in your own life and in the lives of other people. I just think the first thing about that is taking responsibility, and not just in front of yourself, doing it in front of people. Like I think the one power that I've really learned to just embrace is like, some people like you make a mess up with them and they'll never forgive you, that kind of thing. Right. And then there are people like where, people are human, they have feelings too. And it's like when, I go to my friends or I go to my, people who I trust or even, just anyone, and I can be vulnerable. And I could say, hey, I really did that. I did this thing, and geez, I don't know how I feel about like myself and all that stuff. And it's not like I'm looking, they give me their input, their feedback. But at the end of the day, I'm building my own narrative, essentially, to set myself up to be able to take whatever feedback and, hey, say, you know what? Thank you very much. No matter what it is, thank you very much. Right. And use that as fuel for the fire, food for thought, to kind of fuel your direction in life. So yeah, I just think that mistakes are going to happen. Being a perfectionist is inevitable for people who care, especially if you care. But that's the thing you got to understand, that idea of being a perfectionist and wanting things to go well every single time is not going to go that way. But if you care, you can always do better.
Absolutely. Thank you for that response. Now I want to get into, your race car journey. Like you said, it is quite random. I'm not sure how that even came about.
Very random.
What was that process like? Where did that topic even come from? Did you meet anybody, or was it like an event that you were recently invited to? How was that experience like for you?
So I had a family friend who I call uncle, right? And I've known him since I was like almost born. You know, he's always hung out with my father, all this kind of jazz, right? And he's always been so obsessed with racing cars to the point that he went from being an amateur club car racer for the SCCA in British Columbia and went all the way to Asia, where there's more opportunity for, you know, Asians. The industry could be a little bit jaded, right? Especially when it comes to publicity and, you know, who do you promote and who do you sponsor, right? He ended up taking all of that love for race cars, put all his fortune on the line, and fortune, you know, a lot of responsibility on himself too, you know, having taken investment into and going overseas and building his own race car team. Now, I had no notion of racing cars professionally at all, okay, heading in my first year to China. I went to Beijing Normal University for a little bit, where I got to meet a lot of different people from around the world, from, you know, USA, Brazil, everywhere. Like, there were just so many different foreign international students there. And it was kind of like this. That family friend that I'll call him uncle, right? My uncle at the time, you know, he found out that I was in China, and he said, hey, you know, why don't you come visit me down in Zhuhai, which is in the southern coast of China, right? Near Hong Kong. And I said, yeah, I'd love to, right? I mean, yeah, watch you race, sure. I'd be down to check that out, go to the racetrack and all that. And it was a really good racetrack. But yeah, I went down there and I spent time with them. I got to watch them drive. I think at the time they were racing the Ferrari Cup, actually, which was really intense. And then one of the staff, one of the team members came up to me and said, hey, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but there's a go-kart track out back there. If you're bored or whatever, like your uncle told me to let you know, you can go back there and race. Well, the team will cover it. And like, that sounds cool. I think the last time I drove a go-kart was like, I don't know, like when I was like 11, 12 years old. So, you know, and a lot of these people in this sport, you got to bear in mind, like a lot of people who are in sports, no matter what it is, like they get started as kids, right? So I went to the go-kart track anyways, you know, sorry, going back forward here, you know, I ended up going to the go-kart track, and I feel like my first time going around the racetrack, it was in a pack of like, I think it was like 14 people, and it was an outdoor track, and it was just really junker go-karts. Like, they were junk. Like, they're like Honda engines, but they were just like really rackety and all that. Anyways, still fun. Went to my first corner, spun out right away, and I felt it there and then. My perfectionist self kicked in. I was so mad at myself. I was like, how could I spin out on the first corner? And I just chased. I pretty much just like the adrenaline went through me, and I just chased every single person. I was in last place, and it wasn't a serious race or anything like that. It was just for fun, right? But I was so intense at that point. I just started chasing every single person down, and I would copy them. I would just mirror and pass them and pass them and pass them to the point that I ended up getting to first place, like on my first. And then I realized, I'm like, huh. So I was learning techniques just by following people. I didn't even know anything about racing, but I learned by just, you know, just copying people who were probably more experienced than me. And from that point, you know, kind of fast forwarding, I fell in love with it. My uncle said to me, he's like, hey, it looks like you were really having fun out there. And I was like, I was having fun. He's like, would you ever be interested in learning how to race these like more seriously? And I was like, me racing seriously? Maybe. I guess it maybe, because I was like, after that feeling in my chest, I was like, yeah, like that was a very intense session, and it left me feeling like I was possibly maybe good at something. But yeah, that's kind of the kickoff point.
Wow. To kind of conclude with this, did you learn anything in racing in your time of doing that? And did it translate at all with your inspiration with eventually creating Ego Cognito as a card game?
Yeah. Yeah, two things, actually. Or there's probably more, but two things that really came to mind. The first one is being able to be extremely patient, because on a racetrack, let's say you're in a pack of 30 people, not every single time are you going to have, you know, open blue skies to just drive wherever you want to drive. It's very confined. You basically move over 2 inches to the right or 2 inches to the left. You touch tires, you're going off for a ride, and it could really hurt. So learning to be very precise, very patient. If there was ever a time where you had to be a perfectionist, but you also had to be very calm and control your temper, if there ever was a temper, now's the time to do it, because your life is on the line. You know, your sense of safety is on the line. So there's that, which kind of correlated with this idea of taking risk. that if you're able to manage yourself in a very high intense, very dangerous situation at high speeds, you probably have the ability to sit down in a chair, delegate tasks, or figure out what's, you know, the best strategy to kind of go at and not feel like you're in total danger, right? You don't feel the fear as much. So being brave, it taught me really more how to be brave no matter what. And the second thing I would say is understanding how to improve, like getting into the cyclical process of finding out where your flaws are, learning how to go over that same corner over and over again just to perfect your entry, just to perfect your pedal placement, or just how much pressure you're applying, really made a difference in terms of when it came to going into doing Ego Cognito or into any venture that I was trying to do. It really taught me that sometimes you need to know that not everything's 100 or 0%. Sometimes you need to go 35%, sometimes 37%, sometimes 46%. You got to really know how to modulate. It's like if I'm working with someone and I'm pushing this guy 100%, I'm just trying to be ambitious. I'm like, we got to do this. No, people are going to get burnt out. Sometimes you got to know how to let off the gas a little bit to give people a break. And then when you know that they're kind of getting a little too soft, sometimes you got to know how to reapply the gas a little bit, right? That kind of thing. So
I agree. I mean, that's a great response. We're going to be concluding this episode with this question about your race car driving correlating with your eventual startup with your card game company. Before we end off, though, I have a little small game segment that I do with my guests. It's basically a would you rather. And so, you know, I guess this would spark your creativity in a way. Why don't we get started? All this is I ask you questions and you just need to give me an answer, basically choosing whichever one is more appealing to you. So here we go. Would you rather remember everything that has ever happened to you with perfect clarity, but would never be able to imagine new things, or have an unlimited imagination but forget personal memories after a year?
Holy smokes. I'm going to go with the second one.
Second one, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine you would choose the second one since you're just so creative and you're constantly, you know, imagining. The first one would almost hurt you as a person and your future goals.
I'm actually okay with that. It's just more the fact that I would forget things. It's just the fact that I would not be able to imagine new things. Mm-hmm. See, if I was able to imagine new things, I'll take all the painful memories and stuff like that, right? But because I think those are the things that really help to forge who you are. But later on, I think that more importantly, it's important to forge new paths.
All right. Would you rather have a dramatic soundtrack that plays whenever something exciting happens in your life, but you can't control the genre, or a narrator that follows you around and describes everything you do?
I'll take the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would definitely be a lot more fun.
Yeah.
I can hear David Attenborough going off in the back of my head on the second.
Would you rather own a pen that can write down secrets about any person you meet, but you can't erase what you write? Or a book that tells you a random future event once a month, but you can't control which event it reveals?
Holy smokes. I would go with... That's a really tough one. I'm going to go with the second one.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the book that tells me a random event that scares the crap out of me, and I'm going to have to figure out what that means.
Would you rather be able to time travel 5 minutes into the future once per day, or 5 years into the past once in your lifetime?
And does that affect reality?
Let's say it does not.
Okay, then if it
for
doesn't,
both.
If neither affect reality in terms of my direct transmission there, I would say the first one, 5 minutes into the future, once per day.
All right.
We'll call it action economy.
All right. Would you rather wake up as a side character in your favorite book, or it could be a film, and have no control over your fate, or as the main character in the book you've never read or a movie you've never seen, where the plot constantly shifts unpredictably?
I'll take the second one. I'm all about the random ride.
I see.
Spontaneity.
The next one is... Would you rather instantly master one skill of your choice but forget all others you've learned or become decent at everything but never – sorry. So would you rather instantly master one skill of your choice but forget all others you've learned or become decent at everything, but never be great at any one thing.
What do you think I'm going to pick?
Thank you so much for asking me this. No guest has ever asked me to imagine what that answer is. I think you would might choose the first one, where you would master one skill but forget all others, instead of being okay at everything but never great at one thing.
You know, interestingly enough, I would take the second one.
Really?
I would take the second one.
I see. So you're more into like the well-rounded aspect of things.
Absolutely. Mm. I think because it depends on what your idea of perfection is, right? For me, it's about being able to, you know, support people and support systems in every possible way. And if I'm able to contribute in all factors, I become useful in all ways. I might not be the best at it, but at least I'm decent.
Oh, that's a very interesting answer. Okay, cool. Yeah. The last one I have is, would you rather be able to fly, but only while singing a song out loud, or have super strength, but only when you're extremely embarrassed?
I'm going to take the first one.
Flying while you're singing.
I love to sing, so I'm going to be on karaoke mode 24/7.
All right. Okay, yeah, that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for joining me. And if you have time, we'll definitely schedule another meeting. This one will be tailored more towards your actual product and your company and how that became about. All right. I hope
Thank you for
fun.
Having me.
No problem at all. Thank you.
That was
fun. Awesome. Thank you for coming on. I hope you guys had a wonderful time listening. My name is Jeff, and I'll be back next week with another episode, this time with a movie review. So please stay tuned for that. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of the afternoon, and I will see you all next week. Bye-bye, everyone.